kind of one of my favorite movies, and as I really sort of went through this movie and thought about it, it was interesting because I had never thought about it the way I did. But let me tell you what my goal today is. My goal today for you guys is to sort of take you through kind of two different stories. One is the story of the Count of Monte Cristo, and the other is the story of Joseph. And they're two similar stories, and yet at the same time, they're two very different stories. The Count of Monte Cristo is about a man who had everything going for him. He had a job, he had a fiance, he had health, he had friends, but it all turned in an instant. In an instant, it turned around. He goes to the worst possible jail for something he didn't do. His fiance is stolen from him. He loses his livelihood, and his best friend stabs him in the back. His name was, as you heard from the video, Edmond Dantès. He had a void in his life. He had a void in his life. Kind of like what Aaron, it's like what Aaron talked about last week, how we have these gaps in our lives. We have these voids in our lives between what our expectations and what reality is. And he had a big void. So he had to decide, what was he going to do with this void in his life? So in jail, he decides to devote his life to revenge. He ends up finding the treasure that the man in jail told him about. And he becomes rich, and that's why he becomes a count, because he became very rich. And he makes it his life goal to get back at his friends, to make his life miserable on his old friends, and to make his life sort of miserable for his fiance, and then to get her back. His life is characterized by bitterness and vengeance. You know, Hollywood kind of presents this as what to do with the broken promises of others. He had a lot of broken promises in his life, and Hollywood from that video said, that's what you do. You go to get vengeance. You go to get revenge. And then, really, that leaves an even bigger void in our lives. So that's the first story, kind of a general synopsis. I wanted you to sort of, to be able to picture kind of what Joseph went through. It's not exactly the same, but it has a lot of similarities, a lot of different voids in his life. So now I present to you a different story. It's the story of Joseph. We're going to look through Scripture, but we're going to go through a lot of chapters, and I'm going to explain to you. It's in Genesis 37 through 50. It begins in chapter 37 when Joseph is presented as his father's favorite son. A lot of you guys, some of you know this story, but I want you to really hone in with me today and kind of help picture the story in your mind as I go through it. Kind of put yourself in the story and see where he's at. So it begins where he's the youngest of the sons, but he's his father's favorite son. And his father gives him the famous coat of many colors, and his brothers are jealous. So then Joseph decides to tell his brothers about a dream he had. And the dream was they would bow down to him. That probably wasn't the smartest idea. When you're a younger brother with a lot of bigger brothers, you tell your brothers about a dream where they will bow down to you. That's probably not the smartest thing, but he does it. And this makes his brothers hate him even more. They thought about killing him. So one day, his brothers are out tending to their flocks, and their father, Joseph's father, Jacob, sends him out to go check on him. Well, they see him coming from a ways off, and they decide, let's kill him. Man, he says, we're going to bow down to him. Yeah, right. We're not going to take this. We're going to kill him. So they thought about killing him, but instead, one of his brothers, Reuben, they said, no, let's not kill him. Let's sell him to these traders as a slave, as these guys that come through and like would sell things. So they sell him to this group of warrior kind of trader guys. And he's left with this void in his life. This is really the first kind of, here's his expectations. His expectation is, I have a dream where God says, my brothers are going to bow down to me. My brothers sell me. They want to kill me, and then they decide to sell me as a slave. So he has this void of literally expectation and reality. And it will forever affect him. This void will, it's not just something that happens and it's over. This void will forever affect him. And he has to decide, what is he going to insert in the void? What is Joseph going to put in that void? Is he either going to put in it anger, bitterness, wrath? providentially, he goes to Potiphar, who is a really high-ranking official. He is an officer of the Pharaoh, and he's a captain of the guard. So Joseph ends up in Pharaoh's house. Potiphar sees that God is with Joseph. Potiphar is able to see, man, God is with this guy, Joseph. And he becomes an overseer of his house and in charge of all that Potiphar has. So he moves up pretty quickly. He's in charge of his whole house. Potiphar says he trusts him with everything other than the food that he ate. So Potiphar doesn't have to worry about anything in his house when Joseph has it all under control. Now, Potiphar's wife thinks that Joseph is a pretty handsome guy. Desires to be with him. But Joseph refused. He said, no, I am of much more high moral character. I'm going to glorify God in this. He said, no, I'm not going to be with you. So he continually says no. He even says, why would I want to be with you when your husband has put me in charge of everything and held nothing back from you except for you? That is the only thing. He said, I'm not going to do a match like this, and I'm also not going to treat God like this. But one day, Potiphar's wife attempts to lie with Joseph, and Joseph runs. He does the right thing. He runs. He's like, I'm not even going to be around this kind of evil. Well, what happens? As he's running away, she grabs his garment, and as he's running, it falls off, and he keeps on running. Well, she is embarrassed by this because he won't do it. She's jealous, and she's mad. So what does she do? When Potiphar comes home, she yells for all of the men in the house and all the servants and says, look at this man, Joseph, your servant did to me. You know, he tried to rape me. That's what she says. She makes up this false story against Joseph. And so Potiphar, he believes the fake story. And Joseph is thrown into jail on false charges of rape. So he's been sold as a slave by his own brothers. Now he kind of goes again to the top, and he's a slave. In the sense that he's the top of Potiphar's house. He's in charge of everything he has. And then a false story comes against him, and he's trying to glorify God. This false story comes against him, and he's thrown into jail. He's thrown into the jail where the people that would do things against the government would be thrown into. So Joseph has another void in his life. He has another thing. His expectations, man, his expectations are, now I'm the top of Pharaoh's house, man. I'm in charge of everything. And then reality hits. And reality is, I'm in jail. For something I didn't even do, for something I didn't even attempt to do, I ran. So he has to ask himself again. He says, what am I going to fill this void? Am I going to be angry? Am I going to be bitter? Am I going to have wrath? Or am I going to look to God for forgiveness to the people that did this to me? And am I going to trust that God has a plan for my life? So I ask you again. Now, where would you be? I know it's tough because when we read the Bible, sometimes it's hard to really put ourselves in the story. But it's sort of like the Count of Monte Cristo. This guy, he has it all going for him. Then his best friend stabs him in the back, gives false charges against him. He goes to the jail called the Chateau d'If, where he, for I can't remember how many years, I think it was 3 years, he's there. He just endures every year on his birthday. This is what they do for his birthday. They take him into a room. That's his birthday present. So he's there, broken promises of his friends. He's in jail. He's like, I didn't even do anything. That's what Edmond Dantes is there. So I just kind of wanted you to sort of picture that story. Look at those stories together. You can see what's like. Sort of a little bit more of a modern day story of Joseph. So God is still with Joseph, though, now. Joseph is in prison. He gave him favor in the eyes of the prison keeper, so that Joseph was actually, he's now in charge of the prison. The prison guard puts Joseph in charge of the prisoners, and he doesn't worry about anything that's under Joseph's watch. So, now here's what happens. The Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker were in prison where Joseph was because they had committed some kind of offense against Pharaoh. So Joseph is in charge of them. got back. And he doesn't remember David for 2 more years. So 2 more years, David's in this prison. Joseph, thank you. Joseph is in this prison for 2 more years. And instead, you know, Joseph had another boy in his life. He has another, it'll forever affect him. This isn't something that just happens. And then it doesn't affect him anymore. It's going to affect him for his entire life. So the question is, again, what is he going to fill the void with? Does he get angry? Does he get bitter at the cupbearer for not remembering him? Or does he trust that God has a plan for his life? Is he able to look back and say, okay, my brother sold me into slavery, but then I became head of Potiphar's house. Then I'm in jail for something I didn't even do. But now I'm in charge of the jail, and I'm able to interpret these guys' dreams that have direct contact with Pharaoh. So is he able to look back and trust in God's plan for his life? Or does he get filled with anger, with bitterness, with wrath towards the people that had broken his promises? Does he get angry at God for being God? What are you doing? I thought I had a dream that my brothers are going to bow down to me. So what does he fill that void with? So then, Pharaoh has some dreams, right? And they can't be interpreted. He brings in all these different magical guys. They cannot interpret dreams. Well, so 2 years later, the cupbearer remembers this guy Joseph, who was in jail, and interpreted his dream, and it came true. So he says, hold on, Pharaoh, I know this guy. Let's get him. So they quickly, they get him all cleaned up. They shaved him, must have had a big beard, and they bring him in there, and he bring him in the palace to interpret his dream. So this is the dream that Joseph has, is that there's 7 skinny cows, and then there's 7 healthy cows. The 7 healthy cows represent 7 years of good crops, of harvest, of really good harvest. And then he says the 7 skinny cows, they represent 7 years of famine. And then Joseph says, not only that, but he proposes a plan. He proposes this really good plan. Okay, for 7 years, we're going to store up all this grain so that when the 7 years of famine, you know, we'll be able to have food left over. We'll be able to sell food to people. So the Pharaoh is so, likes his dream, interprets his dream so much that he ends up becoming second in charge of Egypt. He is now second in charge of Egypt. Crazy. I mean, he goes from being in prison to now he's second in charge of Egypt. So listen, God was with him the whole time. So there does end up being a famine in the land. But Joseph had planned so well for Egypt that they had plenty of food stored up. And not only did they sell it to the Egyptians, but the entire world at this time comes to Egypt during this great drought and famine to buy food. So it's no doubt that things are going really well for Joseph. I mean, it's Joseph's like, man, I'm second in charge of Pharaoh. Well, you know, what else could I ask? And I mean, it's interesting. We don't know exactly what his thoughts were, but I do picture this. Joseph has gone from a favorite son to slave to prisoner, and now he's taken a command in Egypt. He's the one who sells the food. The brothers are coming right into his hands. They're coming perfectly. If he wanted to get revenge, this is it. This is the time. You know, I'm thinking if Joseph could have thought of no better situation than get back at his brothers. But as we look back at Joseph's life, we see he had all of these voids, he had all these expectations, and then reality hit. And he had many broken promises, he had areas where he could just trust people. But he always filled them with trust in God. He always filled these voids with trust in God. From when he was given up by his own brothers to a slave in Egypt to a prisoner for something he never did. He never gave up on God. He never saw that God had a plan for his life. And he always forgave. He always forgave. Otherwise, I think he would have been like the Count. He would have been destroyed by bitterness, anger, and just the wrath inside him for what people had done to him. So now the situation arises. Joseph's brothers are before him. He knows who they are. They come to him, but they don't know who he is. So Joseph decides he's going to test them to see if they've really changed. What he does was he kind of mirrors what they did to him when they stole him from the slave. So he tells them that they've come as spies to test him and to test Egypt. So what he does is, since they're spies, he puts them in custody for 3 days. Then on the third day, he makes one of the brothers stay in Egypt while the rest go back to get their younger brother. He ties the one brother up right in front of him, just like they had done to him. And then Joseph overhears his other brothers talking and hears how they have remorse over what they did to him 20 years ago. So they don't realize that he understands what they're saying because they don't know that he knows their language, but he understands it. And Joseph is so moved by them having remorse that he actually has to go away alone and cry. So I think we kind of see Joseph's heart there, that he really does care for his brothers, even though what they've done to him. So his brothers, they leave, and as they're on their way back, they find the money that they had paid for the food and their travel bags. So the money they were supposed to pay for the food they took, they find in their travel bags that Joseph had put it there. So now it looks like they've stolen from him. So now they're really scared. But as they get back, he comes to this point, they tell their father what happens, and their father's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you guys have done this to me. So now all the food runs out again. The family's still going on, the food runs out. They have to go back. They got to go back to Egypt to get more food, and they tell their dad, they say, man, the leader in Egypt, he said, we have to have our youngest brother with us, or can't go back. As he said, that's the only way. They still have your other brother in custody. So they return, and Joseph, he tests them again to see if they really changed. Have their hearts really changed? So he has them come to his house for dinner, and he treats them better this time. When he sees his youngest brother, he sees his younger brother Benjamin, he's overwhelmed with this feeling of like, man, my younger brother, I wonder how they treat him. So what he does when they have dinner, he gives the younger brother 5 times the amount of food that the other brothers had. He wants to see how the older brothers are going to treat the younger brother. Do they still hate their younger brother like they did Joseph? Or do they love him? So it ends up they do treat the younger brother right. And when it's time for them to leave, Joseph packs their travel bags again. He has them pack their travel bags. He puts the same amount of money back in again, and he puts his silver cup in there. This is his cup that he drinks from. So, as the brothers leave, Joseph has his men go out and track them down. He says, you stole our cup. And they're like, what are you talking about? Check our bags. We have it. And the guy says, look, whoever's bag this cup is in, he's going to be killed. Well, guess whose bag it was in? It was in the younger brother's. It was in the younger brother Benjamin. So, one of the brothers, Judah, he goes back to David. And he pleads before him. He says, please don't kill my youngest brother. This is my father's, like, his favorite son. And we love him. We already had this happen to our younger brother before. Please don't kill him. So at this point, Joseph is so moved and realizes his brothers have forgiven him that he reveals himself to his brothers. And it says that Joseph weeps so loud that the entire house of Pharaoh's house, also filled the void with trust in God and forgiveness of his brother. Joseph filled the void in his life left by broken promises of others with this truth. This is what he filled it with, and this is what we all can fill. We have the voids in our life. We have our expectations here, but then reality is down here. Here's what we can fill it in. That he could trust that God, from the beginning, knew the plan for his life, and it was to make him a more godly man, and to bring his brothers closer to God, and ultimately, to bring glory to God. So in this story of Joseph, what do we see? We see the winning, the triumph of perspective. In Genesis 45:5, it says, Joseph said, he says to his brothers, as he just reveals himself, he says, "Now don't be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve your life." Joseph said, "God, I knew you had it all in control." Joseph was able to fill the void left by others with the right perspective. He realized that in Potiphar's house, his attitude in the trial of slavery was to be faithful in his duty. This brought alleviation from the pain of the trial. And then in prison, he filled it with an attitude that he was going to help the others that were being afflicted. This brought deliverance from his trial. Here, Joseph reveals another.